Welcome to another episode of the Big Pod Machine. Jason Williams, Gordon Whitmire, Silent Phil, and the ones and twos. Glad to be back. Thank you so much for your support of the podcast so far. First couple episodes in the books.
Nice.
Episode number 3, the waiver claims of the Cincinnati Reds.
And a reason to maybe get a little chapped at a couple things that went down on Thursday, right? By the way, right. We're recording this on Friday.
As the Reds, just an hour, a couple hours before the Reds begin this huge four-game series against the Cubs. The new guys in the lineup.
A couple new guys in the lineup, yeah.
Hunter Renfro, Harrison Bader, the two guys that picked up off waivers, both outfielders. All right, solid players. Like, are they going to move? And we talked about this in our column, which, by the way, a lot of great readership on our column this week, because we talked about the road trip, the Matt McClain injury, the effect of that.
Yeah, it's huge.
We don't need to rehash that. But we did talk about in there how, you know, everything has been so focused on pitching and out of the deadline, and we don't want to belabor the deadline because that horse is
dead. Don't get me started.
That horse has been killed like 50 times.
Well, I've beaten the crap out of it.
Yeah, I know. Poor horse. But I talked about in there about the fact that these guys are averaging a run less a game.
Oh, it's more than that,
I think it was more than that. Yeah, I can't remember what the stat was.
So I looked up this stat. I did it this way. Ellie De La Cruz debuted June 6th. He stole three bases within two pitches July 8th.
That was the Milwaukee.
And including stealing
really
third
at
home.
Really the height of the excitement of this team.
No doubt. They won that game. They were in first place.
Yep.
It was July 8th, one day before the last game before the deadline. I'm not the All-Star break. So that month and a couple of days, they were averaging six runs a game, like almost exactly six runs a game, six runs plus an additional run in that stretch. So 6.03. After that, so the next day they get shut out 1-0. Then they come back and get shut out again right after the break by the same team. And so since the steal of home, which is roughly about the same period of time, maybe an extra week or so, maybe an extra 2 weeks, 4.15 runs per game. That's almost two full runs less a game, a run and a half. And some of that coincides with Jonathan India being on the IL since late July. So that's a big deal because he has meant a lot to that lineup this year. And also Fraley's been out almost that amount of
time. And so let's talk about the good of the waiver pickups, and let's talk about the bad. Let's focus on the good first. When we're looking at this offense or this,
yeah. Well, let's explain what this is first, right? Because we were told, I think it started last year, or maybe it was this year with the new CBA. No, last year with the new CBA.
Yeah, I'm glad. Let's explain kind of the details.
So there's only one trade deadline anymore. Remember, it used to be there was a trade deadline. You could be free to trade everybody. No waivers.
At the end of July,
nothing.
The non-waiver trade deadline.
And then the story we would all do right after that is talk to the GM and say, well, there's still a chance to add players this month, right?
At the end of August trade deadline.
And in August, the one thing about August 31st that hasn't changed, by the end of that day, you have to have all the players in your organization who are going to be eligible for the postseason. Yep. So whoever you add, they have to be somewhere in the organization by the end of August 31st. So what they did is they eliminated the waiver trades. You can't put a guy on waivers. And then with that, it used to be teams would sometimes put their whole rosters through waivers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
And then they would work out deals with teams. And then because you could pull them back.
You know, can you still pull them back?
You can still pull them back.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So in this case, what happened was the Angels in particular, but a couple other teams with various players, the Angels with a half dozen players decided after trading four players at the deadline, partly to appease Shohei and in their efforts to maybe re-sign him and give him a taste of the playoffs, they completely went in the tank. They fell out of playoff the race so fast. And by the way, the Reds were a big part of that, sweeping them out there in Anaheim. So they decided, we're going to be a dollar or so over the luxury tax threshold, you know, in baseball money, so a few million. We'll just dump these short-term players, and teams will gobble them up. Teams in the wild card races will gobble these guys up, and we'll get under the luxury tax threshold. So they put like six guys out there. Well, one of them, the Reds picked up, Hunter Renfroe. Three of them were players the Reds could have used. The Guardians.
Two relievers and
a starter, Lucas Giolito. Giolito and the reliever, Ronaldo Lopez, were guys that they had acquired at the trade deadline, the Angels had. So they immediately turned around and dumped them on a waiver wire. So what happens is, regardless of what league you're in, it used to go through one league, then the other, the pecking order for who gets granted the claims if multiple teams claim the same guy is inverse order of winning percentage. So it looked like almost a stroke of team genius when the Reds lose three out of four to the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks leapfrog them in the standings, but fall behind them in the pecking order for waiver claims, which means that anybody the both of those teams claim, the Reds get them. And they were in the market for the same players. Same with the Giants. The Giants moved past them. So what a lot of people didn't anticipate was the Guardians getting involved.
Right, because you thought the Guardians were a team that they were sellers at the deadline.
They were games under 500 sellers at the trade deadline.
They trade Josh Bell. They trade other players away. You're like, okay, well, they're reloading for next year. And all of a sudden they come and, you know, because the AL Central is historically bad or potentially.
I mean, put it this way, right? There's six games under 500 at the time, but five games back in the division.
Yeah.
So that's this is only part of it, because they really pissed off their clubhouse when they sold at the trade deadline. This is a team that, against all odds, they were kind of last year's Reds. They made the playoffs. They won a playoff series. They came within a whisker of beating the Yankees and going to the ALCS. And they've got a manager who's probably headed to the Hall of Fame and has historically gotten the most out of guys. They would have thought that they would at least get a chance to try to win. So it hit that clubhouse hard. And their GM alluded to that when he talked about why they went and picked up some of these guys.
Let's bring it back to the state of Cincinnati here, because we don't care about Cleveland and Cincinnati and vice versa. They don't care about us. But so you kind of touched on the downside of this for the Reds. The Guardians come in really out of nowhere. The Reds are sitting in good position to claim.
I think there's a lot of people in baseball that didn't expect the Guardians to come in.
But the Reds are in good position to claim a pitcher or two, Giolito, that starter that they really need down the stretch here.
Jason, of all the teams that were within six games of a wild card, so we've already said that the Guardians were within five games of the division. Of all that were within six games of the wild card, the Reds had the worst record. In other words,
in the driver's seat.
They're in the driver's seat for whoever they want. Yeah. So unless, like the conventional wisdom was, unless a team like, let's say, the Cardinals, who have come out and told everybody they need to add three starting pitchers next year, unless the Cardinals decide to get a jump on that, bring a guy in with the hopes that they can work on him for an extension during that month that they have him, unless something like that happens, you figure the Reds are going to get whoever they want.
Right.
And Nick Kroll did say They acquired the two outfielders. He said, we put in claims for other players. Well, do the math. That right. only means the guys that the Guardians got.
Right.
Which means Lucas Giolito and at least one of those relievers.
So the Reds do not address what everyone wanted them to address at the real trade deadline, or the only trade deadline now, was getting a pitcher. Well, on the flip side, it turns out as this season has gone on, they don't just need help pitching. They need help at the plate.
Yeah.
They've addressed as best they can here with picking up these two outfielders. Hunter Renfroe comes in to Cincinnati with 19 home runs, which would lead the club.
Would lead the club. Spencer Steer has 18.
Technically does lead the club now since he's on the team. I mean, he didn't hit him for the Reds, but
he's got more home runs than anybody else on the roster.
Right. Yeah, that's the way to say it. Do you see this addressing that, you know, where they've gone down by nearly two runs a game since early July?
So the other thing that happened on September 1st, when rosters expanded by one pitcher and one hitter each, is that Jake Fraley came back, left-handed hitter. So they got these two right-handed hitting outfielders, and now they get Jake Fraley back, who still is dealing with that fracture in his toe. He's been told he's going to need off-season surgery, but he can continue to play through it as much as he can tolerate the pain. So part of what they're going to do is DH him. He might spend the rest of the season, when he plays, DHing. Harrison Bader is a plus defender. He won a gold glove in 2021. This guy can chase down a ball.
Fraley's probably only going to play, though, against right-handers, right? Or DH against right-handers.
Well, now that they've got some depth to work with,
he's batting they can 121 do that against left-handers.
Right, and that's when he got his days off anyway, against the left-handers. So, yeah, we'll probably see that, especially given the injury, especially given he's not going to be in the field, because he was one of their better outfielders, too. So I think they have addressed this. We don't know. We still don't know when McClain is going to come back, if at all.
If he comes back,
and that's
correct.
Huge. He's got an oblique. Those things often take you measure those in weeks, not day to day.
Yep.
And they haven't given us the prognosis on kind of like how bad it
Jonathan
is.
India.
Jonathan India. He's got plantar fasciitis in his foot. This guy likes to play all the time. He's actually making some pretty good progress. We'll find out by the end of the weekend whether he's able to take the next step yet, which would be probably a rehab assignment for 2-3 days and then come back. That would be good news. But he's already had one setback with this. So we just don't know.
Yeah.
And Joey Votto. I mean, you know, he turns 40 on September 10th. But this guy was hitting for some serious power when he was in the lineup. He's a threat. He sees pitches. I mean, look, he makes the guys around him better. He was producing at a level that did matter. So that's another loss. And the rest of them, man, they're starting an all-rookie infield on a lot of days. And guys that weren't in the big leagues in the middle of May. But
you go out and you get a 31-year-old Renfroe. You get a veteran and Bader.
Yeah, these guys will help.
Bader, like last year in the postseason, 5 home runs in the postseason, was on fire. Yep. So, you know, if they can get there, and he's got that experience. Renfroe, before this season, 19 home runs we talked about, but he hit 29 and 31, yeah, 31 and 29 the last 2 years.
Whatever it was, he averaged 30 the last 2 years. Yeah. Okay, you're right.
It's
not the answer,
best,
though.
But is this the best they could do for this lineup right now?
Yeah, and not
this
only that.
This injury-plagued lineup and this fatigued lineup and the wall that Ellie De La Cruz has hit, what else could you have done here? They did the best they could on that part.
And let's not forget, this was very fortuitous. I mean, the Angels didn't have to put these guys out there. 2 weeks ago, we didn't see this coming.
Right.
So this was an opportunity to add somebody, anybody. So I think, especially in that context, these are big adds, and it helps you down the stretch think that you can go back to scoring against good pitching staffs, scoring enough runs to be competitive. But you tell me, Does this team have enough pitching to get it done down the stretch?
Well, now, I mean, that's tough. That was, I think that was a real, that was with what the Guardians did. That was a tough blow to the Reds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because,
and by the way, it happened on the same day that Hunter Green's diagnosed with COVID. Now he's
after that, he pitched well the other day.
After he pitched well, apparently with COVID.
I don't think they do. You know, Abbott clearly is out of gas. He's pitched the most innings he's pitched in his professional career.
By 25 or so.
And we still have a month left in the season.
Right.
Roughly.
I mean, an ideal case was that they were going to have maybe Lodolo back. I mean, this is before.
Now Lodolo.
The waiver guys. He's out.
He's out for this. He's shut down completely.
Right. So the idea was you were going to get Hunter Green and Lodolo back for the stretch run.
Because remember, that was the spin from the club was,
exactly,
hey, we don't really need to make a trade because we're getting, it'll be like a trade getting Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo back. And
if you throw
one of the two, and Hunter Green's not been good until the other day. It was okay. Right. But
if you consider
now he's sick.
Ben Lively's part of your depth. Now you can look down the road and you can say, well, if Abbott's running out of gas, or if we need to rest him a little more, we can push him back or skip a start. If Williamson, another rookie who debuted in May,
yeah,
he's at a career high now too, still hanging in there and pitching well, but we don't know where that's going to go with a month right left. Now you're down to with Hunter Green out and Lodolo not coming back and not getting any of these pitchers. Brett Kennedy just joined the club on September 1st, another rookie. Now, I don't think the innings thing is a problem with him, but I think he's made two starts.
Yeah.
So
it does not on paper look like this team is going to make it to the finish line.
I mean,
you don't have that veteran hammer where it's like you really need a win today. And right, you can turn to, I mean, you and I covered Johan Santana in Minnesota, and you're like, you knew that was, if things weren't going well, you could turn the ball to him and
he's
going to shut that team down. You don't have that ace, that set veteran ace in this rotation.
Now you do have Graham Ashcraft, who has pitched really well the last couple months.
But again, same
second-year guy.
How's he going to perform down this? So there's questions about all these guys.
I will say this. If you look at the teams that they're fighting for the wild card, Diamondbacks. Now, they've pitched their starting rotation. I don't know where they're getting this performance level. You know, Torrey Lovello must be a genius at these card tricks he's doing with his staff. But they've basically got two guys that I think anybody would reasonably look at and say, I can count on that guy. They got Merrill Kelly and Zach Gallen. Zach Gallen might win the Cy Young Award. Mm-hmm. You look at the Cubs, and they've got maybe two guys, maybe three. They've got Justin Steele, who's been pitching his ass up. He's in the Cy Young race. But he's another guy, career high innings.
And now that Stroman's not there.
Stroman's not there. You do have Kyle Hendricks back.
Kyle with an in. Stroman's out for the year, right?
The reports out of Chicago are that he's out for the year. And then you do have Hendricks. Tyone has pitched all right lately. But so really, you're looking at two or three. The Giants have, Logan Webb and Alex Cobb. Alex Cobb. Nearly no hit the Reds the other day, but they're not really deep either. So you've got these flawed teams. I'll tell you something. Go back and look at about the last 3 weeks or so. The Cubs haven't lost a series, but they haven't swept a series yet either in that stretch. They split the two gamers, and they even against Kansas City and Detroit, they won two out of three. So that speaks to me when mm-hmm. you're playing teams like that and you're not able to pull off a sweep, or you're playing that well, but you don't have that four or five games in a row. That's, it might be kind of a rock fight down the stretch.
That said though, Gordon, and I think many people have said this throughout the year, and even in the middle of a game, you're like, okay, that's the moment. I mean, you and I talked in our column, our last column about how we thought that 24-hour stretch there in the road trip where their plane broke down, they didn't get any sleep. They get into San Francisco at 5 a.m. They're sitting on the tarmac for, what, 8 hours, basically. Yeah.
They literally did the math and realized they could have driven
right
and arrived at their hotel probably an hour earlier.
And then they get to the ballpark that day after very little sleep, find out Matt McClain is going on the injured list, could be out for the year maybe. Then that night, Abbott goes out and continues to just, you know, he's worn, he's tired.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a gamer, and you love his approach and his attitude, but hey, you know, we talked about it, like you gotta build up to that. So, but and yet they come out of that road trip 5-5. They don't have the tiebreaker against the Giants. They did get the tiebreaker against the Diamondbacks, and so it seems like every time we turn around, we're looking at a little segment of something and like, okay, if the Reds can then get through this. And so that's what I'll say here. If the Reds can get through these first seven games without,
yeah, because you got the hottest team in baseball right behind the Cubs.
Seattle coming in after the Cubs.
It's going to be a victory
Labor Day
to not get swept by Seattle. And that's not to denigrate the Reds at all. That's how well the Mariners are playing.
But if you can somehow tread water, 17 of the last 20 games are against teams with a losing record.
Yeah, I was just circling those. I mean, you got an off day.
And the one team with the winning record isn't a great team, the Minnesota Twins.
Right, and they might, you know, if the Guardians have their way. So two of those games against losing teams are against the Guardians, right. In the final week. So that might flip-flop.
But, in Cleveland.
Yeah, but not only do you have that, what you also have is coming out of this gauntlet is a day off between the Seattle and then the Cardinals series.
St. Louis series, yep.
So you'll have the Cardinals at home after a day off, which means you can maybe skip a starter.
Yep.
Or give one of the rookies an extra day type of a thing. Then you've got right after the St. Louis series, another day off. So you've got a stretch after that.
Before they go to Detroit.
Yeah, you've got nine games after that without another day off, but it could allow you, for instance, Hunter Green maybe gets back and you don't miss as much with him. So you've got that, and maybe you're able to even give a little rest to some of these rookies. We'll see, but you get at Detroit, at the Mets. Home and then home against Minnesota and Pittsburgh. I think that homestand against Minnesota and Pittsburgh with a day off in between that series, which is so it's the 19th to the 24th, and then there's a day off after that. That could be, if they can just hang, that could be the season disproportionately.
But it's funny to say this because didn't we say this 10-game road trip could be the season? Didn't we say this Chicago series?
We said this 11-game stretch against the wild card opponents.
Yeah.
And it may yet still be.
Right.
I mean, it's already had a major impact on what the race looks like. And it could. I mean,
so far they're 2-5 in that as you and I record here.
And if they lose a 4-game series to the Cubs, and 1-3, they lose the tiebreaker to the Cubs.
They come in at 5-4, so they need to win.
And then that's three.
They need to win two games.
And then that's 3-8.
Is that right?
In that stretch. Two. So if they win two games, it's 4-7 in that stretch. It's not great either way. But if they lose 3 out of 4, you're talking about now you got a lot of ground to make up.
You're not only farther behind the Cubs in the standings, you also have lost the tiebreaker.
Which means that's another game behind.
Which means, at the end of the day, right. One more question I have before we switch to our bleacher feature feedback segment. Any inkling of if either Bader or Renfroe play well here down the stretch that the Reds maybe will try to retain one or both of them?
I don't know that's...
And I know it's still super early.
Yeah, It doesn't jump off the page to me as making a hell of a lot of sense right now.
Yeah.
because they do have so many young players under club control. They've got a good mix in there. I mean, Hunter Renfro's a good fit for this group. Harrison Bader, by all accounts, seems to be. I mean, it's not like these are bad seeds or there's any issue with them. I would imagine, given the fact that they're both free agents at the end of the year, Hunter Renfro was a $12 million guy this year. So I don't know that they would bring him back. Bader might fit because he can do a couple things for you, right? Yeah. He can hit lefties. He can catch the ball. He might not cost as much. There might be a fit, but that's definitely not something that's in the middle of anybody's radar right now. Yeah.
And the fact the Reds, it didn't really cost the Reds anything to do this. So, I mean, a little less than $3 million bucks combined between the two players. You just pick up their prorated contracts for the remainder of the season. Let's switch gears. Let's kick into our Bleacher feature at GWMLB on Twitter. G Wittenmeyer at Inquirer.com, J Williams at Inquirer.com, at J Williams Cincy on Twitter. Lots of good emails. I want to feature one, which I think is some of them, because of our recording schedule with Gordon going on the road. Keep those emails coming. If we didn't get to your email this week, please remind me, J Williams at Inquirer.com. But I'm featuring this one this week. Josh from Tennessee says on email, I don't understand for the life of me why David Bell was given an extension when he was. Why did the front office not wait to see how the rest of the year would play out first? It isn't like the league was going to be beating the door down to grab Bell up to manage elsewhere. Your thoughts? That's again from Josh in Tennessee. Thanks, Josh, for your email. That's a good
that's
a good question.
It is a good question. I mean, especially if you look out there at some of the rumors, Craig Counsell might be available. We talked about Terry Francona has made noises about maybe
he played for the Reds.
Yeah. So you know, conceivably there could have been some free agent managers out there that are pretty high level guys. I think what you saw here was, I don't want to call it the culmination because they're not there yet, but this has been building, right? Mm-hmm. They talk about it all the time. Look, I'm not a big culture guy. I'm a big, you know, get guys that can bash the ball and throw strikes.
I'm a big culture guy.
And have talent and we'll win some baseball games. But in this case, this is something that they highly prioritized. And this group that's come together, it's under the leadership of, yes, the front office and others on the coaching staff, but David Bell. And a lot of these coaches are guys that mesh with David Bell. And mm-hmm. so what they're, I think, once they overachieved, once it was clear they were doing more than anybody anticipated, and that when guys looked ready in the minors, they transitioned to the majors well and continued to develop there under this staff and in this environment that they had built in that clubhouse. I think that's when they said, all right, if we didn't already feel like he was the guy we wanted with this group going forward, it makes abundant sense. He came into the season as a lame duck manager. Mm-hmm. Also, remember, they were playing pretty well. The conversations got really going and heated in July, and by the end of July, they got the deal done and signed. Mm-hmm. So you're thinking you got a chance to win now. Maybe that's a boost, right? I talked to guys in that clubhouse when we got the first inklings that a deal might be ready to get done. And everybody I talked to, we're behind this guy. They believed in him. They like the way he relates to players and helps them succeed. And also treats each guy as his own guy. It's not just this blanket approach with everybody. And so I think that goes a long way. I think it mattered in the clubhouse. I think the front office probably saw an opportunity here. And I do think that the results suggest that he is the right guy for this group. Now, is this the right group to go forward with and think you can win it all without some significant upgrades here and there? I don't know. I can't answer that. None of us can. And there's a lot to prove there. But I think it's safe to say that so far, David Bell and his staff have gotten a lot out of these guys and made some young players really feel like they belong sooner than they maybe have a right to.
Yeah. Well, I like the move, and I think it's certainly a very fair, legitimate question to ask, especially when you take a step back and look at the scope of the last few years. If you recall where things were at this time last year, not good. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I'm not going to repeat what you said because I agree with you, which is I hate to do.
Upset special,
right? But on David Bell, I have great respect for him. The club has the clubhouse culture, which I know you're not a big guy on, but I had a great conversation with David.
Just to be clear.
No, I know.
It matters. Like, you don't want a bunch of assholes in there.
I know.
But, yeah, culture matters, but talent wins games.
But ideally, you have a mix of both.
Yeah.
I think for a young team, culture is a bigger deal than if you're the New York Yankees. Not this year. I mean, what I'm talking about is the big money.
Yeah, and some of those teams kind of already have a built-in systemic culture, right?
But you also see that you know, the amount of money you can throw at a guy or whatever doesn't always, you know, result in World Series rings.
Right.
Or World Series, you know, trophy, whatever.
Gets you to the doorstep a lot more often.
I keep going back to Tampa Bay, man. You know?
I'll go back to the Yankees. Who's won more championships? Who's won more in the last 15 years than the Red Sox? Who's been there more often than the Dodgers? I mean, it gets you to the brink more often. It gives you the best chance. I mean, there's no question about that. I mean,
I just feel like where this club, what they did this year, with what David Bell has built, with the fact that all these guys are, they're going to be there next year for the most part, a few guys aren't going to be there, but the core of this team is really just getting started. And for them all to sort of stick together and keep building together, I don't have any criticism of the Reds for giving them that extension. But again, I appreciate Josh's question because I think it's a fair question.
Yeah. And you know, if we're talking about fan reaction to stuff, get a lot of tweets and a lot of emails about the job that he's doing. There's a lot of critics out there. There's a lot of David Bell critics out there.
Sure.
I think if you, the amount of time that I've watched these guys, I see a lot of the criticism that, well, what's that guy doing in the lineup? Or what'd he pull that guy for? Or why'd he bring that reliever in? Mm-hmm. Have you seen the roster?
Yeah.
I mean, when a guy's pitching well as a starter, he has tended, depending on who it is, to try to get that extra. Graham Ashcraft's a perfect example. He's the kind of a guy that he's going well for six. He's at that 90 pitch level. Let's see if I can get another out, if not another inning out of him. And, you know, sometimes that doesn't work. But you can't just keep killing the bullpen either. And then when you look at the bullpen, you're talking minor league free agents, waiver claim guys.
Yep.
Guys that are pitching their asses off and really probably overachieving. So it's been a high wire act with that pitching staff all year.
Every game, it seems.
Yeah. And so it's hard to criticize any manager that's sort of navigated that team to this point.
And the fact you're into September now and you're in the thick of the race.
Yeah. I mean,
I think it's hard to argue that what he's done, given that this team was projected to lose 100 games.
No doubt. Yeah, so, I'm with you on that. Anyway. Hey, upset of all upsets. We agree on something.
No. Oof, wow. Check out our column on Cincinnati.com. That's typically posts on either Tuesday mornings or Wednesday mornings. It's either one of those 2 days. Obviously, the podcast, jwilliams@inquire.com, gwittenmeyer@inquire.com. Send us your feedback. We'll expand this Bleacher feature. I do have one more emails, but some, because of our recording, they're a little dated. And so,
make a point to spend most of a podcast on that next time or the time
after. That sounds great. So keep those emails coming. Your questions, we will get to those.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Catch you next week.